This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face to face with business decisions, both online at www.bgov.com and, of course, on the air Thursdays at 11 and Fridays at 2:30 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Two things that seem to go hand in hand when speaking about the economy are jobs and housing. Shortly after the presidential election, the latest job numbers were released. So here to examine them, we've brought BGov senior economic analyst Dr. Neelan Richardson, and to advise us on the impact those numbers may be having on the housing industry. We'll also talk a little bit about housing, specifically in the Northeast, in the wake of Hurricane Sandy. What's being done? How are they surviving? Can the economy in the Northeast withstand the impact that Hurricane Sandy left in its wake? And now that we've gotten all the election night madness behind us, it's time to get down to the business of a lame duck session. The fiscal cliff is one thing we get to hear about all the time. But what about the world of trade? Is the president's diplomatic approach working on the Trans-Pacific Partnership? Will Japan be allowed to come play in the sandbox with everyone else? What about the makeup of Congress? How will changes on the Hill impact decisions that need to be made as we move into 2013? Economic analyst Ken Monahan and BGov trade policy analyst Caitlin Weber join me now to discuss. So before we dive into the new and improved 113th Congress, I'm doing the air quotes here, which you can find a full breakdown of on bgov.com, by the way. I want to talk a little bit about something you did a couple of weeks ago, right after the election, I guess it was, looking at what the president did during his first term trade-wise versus what we can expect to see him doing potentially during his second term. Let's take a look at some unfair trade practices for starters. The president has been very vocal in being the police, so to speak, and pointing out to the World Trade Organization some things running afoul of what one might consider fair. Mm-hmm. And he's also raised more cases than George W. has during his term, like twice as many over mm-hmm. the same time period. Are we still going to be those whistleblowers, Caitlin?
Yeah, that's something that you heard Obama talk a lot about on the campaign trail, that he's raised these cases to the WTO at twice the rate of the Bush administration. And I think that in the second term, that's something that the administration will continue to do where they believe that they have the grounds to win those cases. Mm-hmm. There may be the potential that they may not focus on the enforcement component as much. The enforcement component plays very well to voters, but some in the U.S. business community are concerned that whenever the U.S. raises a case against China, in particular to the WTO, often we see China raising a very similar case against U.S. exports, either in that body or a case, you know, in their own government against U.S. exports. And so there's the concern from some U.S. companies that whenever the administration takes an action like this, there's the potential for retaliation against U.S. exports and investments in China. So I think we'll see more of that, but maybe not as intense at the first term. I think there's a potential for that.
I want to put Iran in the crosshairs, so to speak, talking about an effort to control their continued strive to nuclear power. Mm-hmm. What's next?
So in the first term, they spent a lot of time and effort getting Iran sanctions through both the UN and getting our partners in the UN, Russia and China, to agree to those sanctions, and then also getting unilateral sanctions through Congress as well. That was a pretty tough effort, and actually the comprehensive Iran sanctions laws are still undergoing the regulatory process, which is something that we'll be watching at BGov as well. And so I think in the second term, we'll continue to see the administration taking targeted action on Iran sanctions when it comes to enforcing current law. And there's a lot they can enforce under current law. They can go after subsidiaries of U.S. companies, maybe that are doing things that they shouldn't do. They could be going after particular Iranian leadership or companies there. There's a lot that they can do with their current toolbox, mm-hmm. so to speak. So I'm not sure that we'll see another push to get comprehensive immigration reform through Congress, in at least in the early part of the second term.
So let's talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. The Obama administration wants to have that all wrapped up with a nice little bow by the end of 2013, beginning of 2014. How feasible is this?
It's going to be really tough.
Right.
It's going to be tough because there are a lot of outstanding issues between the U.S. and the other countries that are members of the deal. And there are also countries that want to join. There's Japan has said it like would like to join the deal, and that's something that we've examined in a recent study as well. And the majority of the U.S. business community wants Japan to join the deal. That would create the largest free trade agreement in the world. But U.S. automakers vehemently do not want Japan to join that agreement. And so that's going to really make it difficult to for anything to happen, whether or not Japan joins that deal and really enlarges it.
Going to compromise the president's traditional diplomatic approach, don't you think?
Right, right. And, you know, cars, the automotive industry, we've talked about it earlier, it's something that's extremely sensitive in the U.S.
Right.
And so we could see, you know, potentially a fight over that. And I'm not sure, you know, whether or not the president wants to take that on. There are a lot of other things on the agenda. And so I'm not sure that getting Japan into the TPP is worth it to the administration. But I think that they will definitely push ahead with TPP. It's going to be hard to do, but I think they are looking at this agreement as their trademark. This is they want to make their impression on trade agreements going forward with this deal. The other agreements that passed in the first term were Bush administration deals. And so this is a negotiation. This will be negotiated and finalized by the Obama administration. They're going to really want to finish it up. They just have to get Congress to play along once they do.
We'll just have to wait and see what happens. But this is a good opportunity to kind of dovetail into the makeup of Congress, because TPP touches so many different places on the Hill. The 113th Congress is going to work, and these issues really don't solve themselves. In fact, in your piece here, jurisdiction over international trade and investment issues spans several committees in Congress. Let's take a look at one of them for starters, the House of Representatives Ways and Means Committee. Ken, break this down for me. We've got some new people coming in. Does this make some changes?
Well, I think largely what will happen with the Ways and Means Committee is you'll see the Republicans maintain control over the House, as we all know, and the Democrats are in the minority. The leadership in the Ways and Means Committee with Dave Camp, Congressman from Michigan, will not change.
Right.
He will still be the chairman, and Sandra Levin will be the ranking member for the Democrats. So the composition will not be different. That's essentially going to be a status quo. I think in terms of the priorities that the committee will probably put forward on trade, will likely be similar, if you will, to what happened in the last Congress. They'll continue to push new trade agreements, you know, the administration to negotiate the TPP,
mm-hmm.
also a possible agreement with Europe that's being mooted up right now between the U.S. and European leaders. They'll also, I think, be a little bit more hesitant, if you will, on certain Chinese criticism, if you will, on currency, for one. The House has generally been a little bit more reticent to push as hard on that, at least in the last Congress. At least the leadership within the Republican Party in the House has been. So I think that you'll see some of those things will continue to kind of proceed apace in the House. And whether the administration pushes harder on certain initiatives or not, and how the House responds to that, we'll have to see kind of as we move along. But I think right now we're not seeing right now a major shift.
Tell me about the renewal of generalized system of preferences. That expires December 31st, 2013. What are we talking about here?
Developing countries get a preferential access into the United States, meaning tariffs are reduced or eliminated, if you will, on imports from, you know, countries as wealthy as Brazil and as poor as some of the African countries and others. So I think you've got that duty-free access into the U.S. market expires at the end of 2013. So there will be a push at a minimum to renew that program longer beyond that. But there's always been also discussion in Congress about reforming it in some way to bring more countries in or reduce the countries and change the benefits in some way. And that's always been a longstanding kind of issue or question in Congress and how that will go.
And it was interesting because the last time GSP was renewed, there was a big fight over started by one U.S. company who said that this program was undermining their ability to compete. And they actually allowed the program to expire, which a lot of folks said was hurting the capacity of these countries to develop their exports, and also allow U.S. companies that use it to source inputs into their manufacturing processes to hurt them as well. So it'll be interesting to see if there's the same amount of controversy on GSP this time around.
Moving on to the Senate side, let's look at the Finance Committee. Jurisdiction over reciprocal trade agreements, tariffs, and import quotas. Explain, Ken.
Well, again, I think this is essentially going back in time, these committees had jurisdiction, both Ways and Means and Senate Finance, over the collection of tariffs because it was a finance issue. It was bringing money into the Treasury, and so they've, if you will, maintained that jurisdiction over not just tariffs, but more broadly any border and trade issue that kind of emanates from that, and it's certainly been expanded. And so that is essentially what that means. So import quotas are any restrictions on the amount of product that you can export, number of amount of cheese you can trade, you know, export to Europe. Well, if Europe puts a quota or restriction on that they've got some degree of responsibility or oversight on that.
Leadership in this committee largely unchanged. Max Bach is still there. You've still got the ranking member Orrin Hatch. I would imagine they're pretty entrenched in what's going on, and we're not going to see much going on there aside from status quo.
I think that's just as we were talking about with the House. I think you'll see a more or less similar structure in the committee in terms of the priorities. The bigger issue will be the parties and which, to the extent the leadership wants to push harder or less on any initiative that comes out of the administration or that pops up in the next year. We'll see, may some differences because it's a, you know, Senate's controlled by the Democrats and the House and the Republicans, but broadly speaking, I think those same general dynamics will be at play.
So I think outside of the committees, Ways and Means and Finance that have primary jurisdiction over trade issues, there will be some personnel changes, some leadership changes, if you will, that could have the potential to affect policy and the ability of the Obama administration to get their agenda through. The renewal of the Export-Import Bank, which is the official U.S. export credit agency, comes up in 2014, and there was another huge fight over that renewal just this past year, and it almost expired. The two likely incoming Republican leaders of the two committees, Banking and Financial Services, who have a big say over that issue, actually voted against reauthorizing the bank last year. And so it'll be really interesting to see what happens this time around. Likely there'll be they'll push even further on lowering lending limits for the bank. Critics of the bank say that it exposes taxpayers to undue risk, and it provides some degree of corporate welfare. It'll be interesting to see how far Republicans will go against one of their traditional constituencies, which is the U.S. business community, which for the most part really supports the bank. So that's something to watch for fireworks for in the second term as well.
Do you see, okay, a lot of them have said, okay, I'm in the office again, I'm good to go. Can I let these slide just a little bit in the early part of my term and then rein them back in towards the end just to bring them back into my camp? Will there be a lot of that posturing?
I think that always happens. Yeah. I think in the first year or so, you can breathe a little easier when it comes to new members of Congress or who've been newly elected. Just a little bit, because you almost have to start campaigning right away.
Sure,
but
sure.
Certainly what you do in the second year is closer in the minds of voters. And I think the administration knows that and will strategize around that. So they might try to get the more difficult parts of their trade agenda through earlier in the term. But something else that we haven't talked about that's going to be tough is trade promotion authority, which is Congress traditionally has the authority under the Constitution to lower tariffs, but they give that to the president through something called trade promotion authority, which allows them to negotiate these deals, and Congress will then approve them without amending them. The last time that went through Congress, another big fight, because Congress has to tell the president what its objectives should be in these trade deals. And everybody has a different idea about what the administration should be doing. There could be a fight there over labor protections, over environmental protections. So that's potentially something that we're going to see happening maybe earlier in the second term. And the administration also, they need TPA. Most likely they need it if they want to get the Trans-Pacific Partnership and a potential U.S.-EU free trade agreement through as well.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name's Alan Scott. I'm joined by Caitlin Weber and Ken Monahan. We're talking trade in the now second term, moving into the second term of President Obama's tenure in office. And anything that you'd like to wrap up by letting us know to look out for as we move into 2013?
Well, I think one thing we mentioned a little bit before, this European-U.S. Free trade agreement that's being discussed right now. One of the questions out there that I've kind of been keeping an eye on is also the relationship between that negotiation and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Mm-hmm. One thing that we've been following is the extent to which the U.S. would be able to, and Caitlin mentioned this in her piece, that really negotiate a comprehensive deal with Europe, meaning eliminate all of the agriculture barriers and other restrictions that have kind of affected the trade in that sector, but there are other issues as well. And the extent to which, if there's a deal that's not quite ambitious or comprehensive, that'll undermine the Obama administration's objective to really negotiate a 21st century deal with the Pacific. So there's some tension between those two sides. I think that, you know, some have said the bandwidth of the administration to negotiate both deals at the same time, it may be limited. I don't agree with that perspective, but I just think that more broadly, there could be some tension there as the administration pursues another really gigantic trade initiative. And then if you add Japan into the mix, as Caitlin was saying earlier, I mean, it's just the politics of this will become far more, I think, complicated, and you'll see different sides, both in the House and Senate, and also within the administration and the business community, you know, challenging the different arguments on this.
Sure. So,
and I think the trade community needs to also look at the agenda holistically and look at the other issues that the Obama administration is going to want to tackle in a second term. I'm thinking mostly of comprehensive immigration reform. We're hearing a lot about that now. That's potentially going to be another big battle. And so that could take time and attention away from taking on some of these other battles in trade. So that's something to keep in mind as well, that we could potentially have a very crowded policy agenda going forward.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because I think when we the first term of the Obama administration, I think they really kind of pushed off on trade issues the first 2 years in light of healthcare reform. And
there were a lot of things, but it was
striking, I think, that to see the extent to which they basically said, well, we'll hold off on these things until we've got the political space to maneuver. And I think that was a clear strategy to clear away everything else,
sure,
to get healthcare reform and stimulus and the rest of it. So I think Caitlin raises a really good point there. I think that the question will be how much immigration and some of these other issues that they're going to try to push in the first, maybe trying to put, and of course the fiscal cliff and the budget,
sure,
deal. Will limit the bandwidth, again, to use that word, to negotiate or push other initiatives on trade. So something worth watching as things continue.
All right. As we head into 2013, we'll definitely have you back to keep us up to date. Caitlin, Ken, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alan.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And we have a resident jobs/housing/economic expert. And she comes by from time to time to give us an update, albeit good or bad. She's here to deliver the news. Don't kill the messenger. Her name is Dr. Neela Richardson, and she's joining me now. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Alan.
Thank you for coming. So shortly before, I guess it was right after the election, job numbers were released. Oh, good, bad. Can you break them down for us?
We got a little of both. We got an up side in the unemployment numbers. They edged up to 7.9%, but the jobs numbers were positive.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, we got another month of pretty solid job growth.
This isn't, we're saying job growth versus people falling out of the system as we make that comparison. Could that be in there as well?
The job numbers were strong, but not strong enough. So you're right to couch it with all these concerns we have about the jobs market, that people are becoming discouraged, that wages are stagnant, that it's an increase in part-time workers, perhaps temporary workers that are driving better numbers. So these are all within the data. But we're growing slowly. We're growing stagnantly and slowly, but we are growing.
Right.
We're not receding. We're not decreasing, and that actually is a positive, and that's the economy we're in right now.
Speaking of the economy, let's talk a little bit about housing, because the two of these kind of go hand in hand. Specifically, we're looking at job growth that is growing, as you said. We're couching it with the people falling out of the system, but it is on the upward tick. Is the housing situation improving at the same rate or better than the job situation at this point?
I know it's going to be hard for you to imagine this, Alan, but housing is actually doing worse than the jobs picture.
Worse? Now, I wasn't expecting that.
Right. There are some great indications in pockets of the country that housing is doing better and that prices are stabilizing. But we have a long line of impediments to housing. One is that the credit availability isn't there. Banks aren't lending, and it takes a lot to get a loan right now.
Right.
That's cutting off demand. So even though we're seeing prices stabilize, it's lower volume, mm-hmm, lower transactions, lower sales overall. Two, there are some regulations that are are coming down the pike that will really affect the availability of credit. So we may even see some shrinkages in credit availability. And three, you know, housing wasn't a big issue during the campaign season. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a big issue for either candidates for the election. So it's not going to be a surprise if it remains a little talked about big problem going forward in the second Obama term.
Looking in the Northeast specifically, in the wake of Hurricane Sandy, you've got just ultimate devastation going on up there. People have lost their homes. I know of people who, I mean, we work with people in New York who have unfortunately lost everything. Mm-hmm. How bad is this going to be on the economy when those claims start being cashed in on insurance companies? You know, I had a roof leak. Mm-hmm. I went to my insurance company and I said, I got a leak in my roof, kind of sheepishly going, should I file a claim? And the response was, you're on a no-claim policy. Mm-hmm. If the amount of the repair is more than your deductible, expect a significant increase in your rates. We're kind of hitting them at both ends at this point, aren't we?
Right. And so the devastation to the individual families and that and the cities most prominently affected is absolutely hard. It's hard to swallow when you're going through it, when you're day eight of no electricity. Yeah. It's all bad when you have to rebuild your lives, not just your home.
Sure.
However, in terms of GDP numbers, in terms of the economy, this is just going to be a blip on the screen. It's hard to imagine when you see the devastation, but it's not going to have a long-term effect on the economy. We know this from previous disasters, previous hurricanes. They don't really have a long-term effect. In fact, ironically and counterintuitively, they have a short-term stimulus effect on the economy because the destruction is not counted in the numbers. The rebuilding and the reconstruction is counted in the numbers, and
Good point.
It gives the economy a little bit of a boost.
Good point. Working at Bloomberg. By the way, you're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm here with Dr. Neela Richardson, and we're talking housing, jobs, economy in general, and working at Bloomberg occasionally. I'll get a phone call from somebody who's trying to reach city services in New York. And I've heard the stories of people, and they're some of them are just heart-wrenching. I took a phone call from a contractor who was driving up from Florida trying to figure out where to go to help first. Mm. So you're right. It is going to be a bit of a stimulus, but I just don't see a happy holiday in their futures.
No, and let's not get it twisted in terms of the population concentration on the East Coast. The East Coast, that area in particular, is responsible for generating a lot of economic activity, particularly in the financial markets. And so this is extremely disruptive. But again, the disruption is generally temporary when you look at the macro picture. And I hope it's also temporary for the majority of the people who were affected by it.
As do I. We wish them all well. And any parting words on jobs, economy, housing?
You know, we're in for a very slow crawl without any kind of congressional action. And so looking, if you want to look for what can help the economy, look to the White House, look to Congress, because really it's in our legislative hands at this point. What can be done to really get us over this hurdle and back to significant improvement in the economy?
Words that I couldn't have said better myself. Dr. Neela Richardson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Special thanks to Caitlin Weber, Ken Monahan, and of course, Dr. Neela Richardson for joining me on the program today. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at BGov. You can follow me for show updates and more at Alan L. Scott. And we'll do this again next Thursday at 11 a.m. We have plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.